From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 22nd day of September 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's the senior grains analyst at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. In agricultural news, Russia plans to cut food imports in half over the next 3 years. And analysts say the strike at three Canadian mines should not result in a further spike in the price of potash. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories later in the half hour. This is the Harvest Hour edition of the Closing Market Report. That means there's a second half hour to our program on most of these radio stations. Today we'll use that segment to talk about livestock, in particular hogs in the state of Illinois. Tim Myers will be our guest. Jim Hires will be on the program today too. He's the executive director of the Eastern Illinois Food Bank. Now, the organizations Hires and Myers represent actually have something to do with each other. We'll get into the meat of that topic on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL, public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to cooley at admworld.com.
In Chicago, on this Monday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. Nearby December wheat futures at $7.37¾, up 19¾ for the day. March contract, 20 cents the gain, at $7.57¾. May futures in the wheat pit, $7.70¾, up 20½. December corn futures, $5.58½, 16¼ higher. The March contract at $5.76¼, up 17¼. May corn futures, $5.87¼, up 17¾¾. July futures, 18¼ higher at $5.96½. November soybean futures, $12.05, up 61½. January, $12.22, 62¾ higher. March contract at $12.36½, up 63½. And the May soybean futures today at $12.47, 65¢ higher. October bean meal futures at $3.23.30, finished $10.80 higher. October bean oil at $49.55, up $2.63 on the afternoon. October live cattle at $102.45. 90 cents higher, and October lean hogs up 45 at $68.65. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby October crude oil futures at $126.50 a barrel are now trading at $21.95 higher. November futures $109.25, up $6.30. Ethanol trading $2.42¼, or rather $2.42¢, up 4¢. The October natural gas at $7.65 is 12¢ higher, and November at $7.93 is up 8½¢. The RBOB gasoline $2.68¢, up 8¢. November at $2.66, up 11½¢. October heating oil, that's diesel fuel, $3.03¢, up 13¢. And the propane is trading 5¢ higher at $1.49½. Nearby September gold futures, $903.90, up $43.30 at this hour. And the Dow Jones is posting a loss at 256 points lower at 11,123. The U.S. dollar currently trading at 76.213. is down 152 for the day. The CRB index at 371.35, up 11.77, and the Goldman Sachs is 32 points higher at 672.47 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like today. Should be mostly sunny skies. Highs will range this afternoon from 76 near Lake Michigan and in northeastern Indiana to 84 in the south. Tonight, mostly clear. Patchy fog will form. Lows will range between 50 in northeastern Indiana to 60 in the west central parts of Illinois. And tomorrow, mostly sunny skies. Highs will range between 80 and 85. A weak cool front should approach northwestern Illinois on Wednesday and may trigger a few showers in northern and west central parts of Illinois Wednesday afternoon and into Wednesday evening. It is now fall across the Midwest.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Monday afternoon. Time to take a look at the commodity markets. Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, joins us this afternoon. Hi, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, do you want to start with the commodity markets, which had a big good up day, or with crude oil? Where should we go first?
Well, the crude oil, basically we went into last trading day of the October crude oil and had somewhat of a squeeze play take place there. Crude oil was the topic as we got to, about 11 o'clock, 11:30. That's when the market took off. The October crude oil got as high as $130 a barrel. That's up over almost $27 a barrel. But you look at the deferred contracts, they're up $5 to $6 now. So it's more of squaring away that lead contract. The volume was fairly heavy, but the open interest, you know, you're only talking 23,000 contracts there as they got that squared away. But it was reflective of what was taking place in the domestic and world market environment. As y'all well know, the government's trying to bail out the problem we have with Wall Street. When you add it all up, of all the bailouts that's taken place, you're talking close to add another $1 trillion to the national deficit. And we're starting to see maybe Main Street being concerned about bailing out Wall Street. Some legislators are getting quite a few emails and phone calls that they might be a little leery about passing a bailout draft as been presented to them here as they sort through it. But when you look at the big picture, somebody's got to pay for it, and we know who that's going to be. And when you look at the big picture, this kind of big pill to swallow is quite a bit inflationary. So we saw a lot of movement here in the last few trading days. It started last week with the metals and even in the energies and even the agricultural products. And we're just starting to see people put some money back in to the hard asset area there, Todd.
Inflationary, so the dollar is down and commodity markets are up.
Yeah, dollar down hard. The foreign currencies, the reverse of that, are up sharply. There's not a lot of confidence floating around still here. So right now, as a commodity trader, you look for some higher prices here over the near term. As far as agricultural products go, this is great news for those who didn't get stuff sold at some higher levels. Hopefully there'll be some follow-through here and see some higher prices to get caught up on some sales. As far as foreign buyers go, we did see China come in and buy some U.S. beans. And so for those end users or buyers, they're probably going to use weakness in here to get some coverage on.
Next week probably will be the week producers in your area get a good start on corn?
Yeah, we're getting a little here and there. We've heard some guys into corn. Earlier corn, you know, was in this 170, 180. We're starting to hear some 200 bushel corn as a whole. We're probably seeing corn yields come in 10 to 15 better than expected, but we weren't quite expecting good yields due to the dry August. Bean yields have been anywhere from 55 to 59 bushels on an average. Producers pleasantly surprised there, but we're talking about very early activity, and you're right. We'll see what next week or two brings as we get more of the meat to harvest. Weather's going to be a lot more favorable. The shorter-term, longer-term forecast here over the next week and a half, showing above-normal temperatures and below-normal in precip. So hopefully we can see some maturity levels be reached here and see rapid dry down. We'll see what this afternoon's crop conditions report shows on maturity level, and I think that will be the play as we go in the evening trade.
Any guesses from you?
Well, I imagine we've been running 3 weeks behind. I imagine we're going to narrow that up to 2 weeks behind. When you look at the big picture here, as far as the good Exxon category, I think that's sort of been put in the back burner here. I think the trade's more interested in watching maturity level, any frost freeze forecast on out, and what type of actual yield results we get out of the field in here. But the overall technical picture is turned up in through here. You look at the divergence on the charts, some of the shorter-term cycle stuff is pointing that we could get something going here. The main obstacles to watch this week technically will be the 580 futures in December corn and this 1223 level in November beans. If we can sort of chart above those levels, move above those levels, we should start to see renewed technical buying, along with maybe some end users wanting to come forward to get some coverage on.
We appreciate you being with us this afternoon, Kurt.
Very good.
Have a good afternoon. Kurt Kimmel is with Grainfield Marketing, or actually with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens on Monday afternoons.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Baisdefer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's time now to take a look at the agricultural news. Dave Dickey is here.
In agricultural news, a Wall Street trade group is calling for a suspension of the Security and Exchange Commission's fair value accounting rules for all mortgage-related assets. The Financial Services Roundtable, which represents the chief executives at some of the largest U.S. financial firms, wants the Treasury to set broad parameters for firms to participate in a plan that will allow the Treasury Authority to purchase $700 billion of mortgage-related assets from troubled financial firms. The group is also urging the Treasury to include commercial real estate loans linked to construction and housing. Russia plans to cut food imports by half over the next 3 years. Russian trade ministers say they would also suspend agreements made during its bid to become a member of the World Trade Organization on red meat, poultry, and manufacturing because they were unfair. Russian officials say the suspension would end once Russia becomes a member of the WTO. Analysts say the strike at three Canadian potash mines should not result in a sharp spike in prices, at least for the next few months. Potash prices are already at a record $1,000 per ton in many markets. The shutdown mines account for about 6% of world production. About 500 members of the United Steelworkers Union walked off their mine jobs 6 weeks ago, arguing they deserve a bigger share of the Potash Corporation's record profits. And the Australian Bureau of Agricultural and Resource Economics say if there are timely rains, new crop wheat exports could top 13.5 million metric tons. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming here at WILL Public Radio for the farming world.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
This is kind of a special week here on the Closing Mark Report. As you know, we're doing many things, including our extended Harvest Hour edition. Later in the afternoon, we'll talk with Tim Mayers. He's with the Illinois Pork Producers Association, but wanted to bring one other person in on this week, and we'll talk to him a couple of times. I think next Friday, the coming Friday, we'll talk to Jim Hyers as well. He's the executive director of their Eastern Illinois Food Bank. Now, I must admit up front, that part of this is because I volunteer and serve on the board for the Eastern Illinois Food Bank. But food not only comes from the farm gate, but it hits the consumer's plate, and sometimes it's not easy to get there. Jim Hyers is one of the people that helps make sure that people that are hungry all across the eastern part of Illinois can get to food services. Jim, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you, Todd.
Tell me, Jim, what does the food bank do?
The food bank is a distributor of food to food pantries and soup kitchens and shelters across East Central Illinois. I'd like to say that we put the food in the food pantry, the soup in the soup kitchen, and the snack in the snack programs. And it's for emergency food programs that provide food for the elderly, needy, and children.
This is a special week for the food bank. There are a couple of things that are happening. Maybe you should start by talking about tomorrow evening's event.
Well, tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at the Champaign Library, we will be presenting our second annual hunger symposium. This year it's called Running on Empty, the Impact of Hunger in Our Community. And we've got community leaders from across the state in the area to talk about poverty in our area, the health issues associated with hunger. We have a representative from the Regional Office of Education to talk about the impact of hunger on children in schools. And then I think we're going to unveil some statistics about East Central Illinois that people don't know about and are somewhat alarming.
What kinds of stats?
Well, for example, there are about 136,000 people in East Central Illinois that are at risk for hunger every day. And the need in our particular area has grown dramatically over the last year. For example, last July, in July 2007, the food pantries and soup kitchens across our area served about 34,000 persons during that month. This July, that count was 45,000 persons during that particular month. So we have seen an upswing. And as we'll talk about, I think the depth of poverty as it pertains to people in our own area.
One other note for this week, there's a $25 challenge. You talked about people that are hungry at this point, and there's a $25 challenge for the week. You and I are both participating in this, though I got to tell you, Jim, that I'm not doing very well, and it's because I volunteer in so many organizations, there's a lot of food around most of the time.
I can understand that. I know that.
And how about you? Tell me about the $25 challenge, what it is, what it means, and what we're doing.
Well, the $25 challenge, it was set forth by the Illinois Food Bank Association members. We're one of eight food banks that serve Illinois, to make the people aware of just what people have to some of our friends, neighbors, and fellow citizens have to go through to eat every week. We selected $25 because that's the average amount of money a recipient would get from food stamps to eat on for a week. And again, the purpose is to show how difficult choices people have to make. You and I are embarking on this week. I started this morning. I did my grocery shopping yesterday, $24.61 worth of groceries. And I'm going to try to eat on that all week, roughly $3.45 a day.
Well, good luck. I started yesterday, and I thought, you know, I can make it through this pretty easily. And then last night, it was not too terribly hard. My younger son is in the Central Illinois Youth Football League, and they were working to put some things together with homecoming for Muhammad next week. There was food there. Today, there's a kickoff of the Campus Charitable Fund Drive. Right here on campus, I serve on that committee, and there was a meal at the noon hour, and it's, you know, it's not easy for me to stay away from food, so we'll see how that goes.
I think it's good that you have those resources, because what we're trying to do is to indicate that there are people who do not have those resources, and that they have to make choices. When I did my shopping, what I found out, it wasn't the fact that I don't think I can eat on $25, is what I won't be able to have. I love coffee, and I wanted to buy a pound of coffee right off the get-go. So I did purchase that. It was on sale, $3.99. But I had to give up something else during the week, and I was going to buy a whole chicken, and I decided not to buy the whole chicken. I bought chicken parts instead, simply so because I only had $25, and I made a conscious choice to have coffee. I think the whole point, Todd, is to get people to understand that there are people who have to make those decisions every day. And sometimes we, who aren't in those circumstances, forget that.
Indeed. We need to finish up very quickly. Tim Mayers of the Illinois Pork Producers Association will be on the program later with us in the second half hour of the Closing Mark Report. But there is some cooperation that you might be able to tell us about between the pork producers in the state and the food banks. Pork producers have made some donations.
Yes, they have. We're very, very proud of the partnership that the Illinois Food Bank Association has with the Illinois pork producers. That was through our food bank in Springfield, Illinois. The Central Illinois Food Bank generated that partnership, and we worked with Tim and his organization this year. They've pledged and their processors to hopefully to furnish close to 100,000 pounds of pork this year to the Pork Producers Association, and that's donated not by the producer and the processors across the state. We're very excited about that.
Yeah, and there have been some receipts right here in East Central Illinois.
In East Central Illinois, mm-hmm. we've received roughly 1,000 pounds, and we're just delighted, and we're hoping that those things can continue. And when we can get protein out to pantries that normally don't have that available to them, because you have to understand, the agencies that get that food don't have a great deal of money themselves. So it's a wonderful program. We're very proud of it.
Jim, I'll talk to you again next Friday, okay?
Thank you, Todd.
All right. Thanks much. Jim Hires is the executive director of the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, joining us here on a Monday on this Closing Market Report.
I'm Bill Hammack. This week, I'm taking a deep look at our water supply. Tomorrow, I trek through the new Illinois American Well Field near Bonneville to see whether it will suck dry the Mohammed Aquifer. I talk with a Champaign County resident whose well, his lifeline as he calls it, may be threatened by the new field. Join me tomorrow on Morning Edition here on AM 580.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a production of the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Time to take a look at what's been happening in the world of the cash markets for grain. And Greg Johnson should be on the line with us this afternoon from the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Greg.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, anybody moving in the fields?
We're starting to hear a little bit over in Vermilion County, especially the northern part where they didn't get as much rain last week. 2 to 3 inches there instead of the 5 to 7 to 10 that we had over here. So there is a little bit of corn and beans being cut today, and I think as every day progresses from here on out, we'll see a few more venture out.
Well, it is fall now officially, and I suppose that means we ought to be in the midst of harvest season at some point. I saw some soybeans that look like they ought to be cut in the next few days on my way in, maybe a cornfield or two. What kind of yields are you hearing?
The early bean yields are very, very good. I guess we kind of expected that. You know, we had the ones that got planted earlier, the ones being harvested now. I guess the jury is still out on the majority of the beans that got planted in late May, early June. So we'll see how, but those are still 3 weeks away from being ready, so we don't know. But these early beans that got planted in May seem to be doing very well. Corn yields seem to be doing very well if it didn't get drowned out. Most of the corn that's been taken off so far, though, has been extremely wet. It just doesn't seem to be wanting to dry down. That could be a function of the lack of growing degree units here the last week or month or so. But hopefully one of these weeks corn will start drying down. But the beans that are coming out of the field not only are yielding well, but they are dry as well.
And what are your thoughts at this point on cash basis?
Cash basis probably has gotten about as good as it's going to get if the board continues to rally. That usually translates into a weaker basis. So basis has improved a lot, and I think we've seen the majority of the improvement for the time being.
And your bids for the day are?
Let's see. Cash corn tonight is going to be 528. That's for all of September, October, November. January, 551. The cash beans are 1155, again for SEPOC or NOVE, with January at 1172.
All right. Thanks much, Greg.
Thanks, Todd.
Greg Johnson is with the Anderson. Somebody from that office right here in Champaign County joins us each and every Monday on the Closing Market Report to take a look at the cash grain market. In 2 minutes, I'll be back with the agricultural weather forecast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. The Illinois General Assembly is back in session this afternoon with ethics and health care on their latest agenda. Governor Rob Blagojevich is asking lawmakers to approve his plan to extend more insurance coverage for people with autism. Blagojevich wants insurers to cover up to $36,000 a year and unlimited doctor visits until the age of 21 for people with autism spectrum disorders. Currently, only people in large insurance pools can get that kind of coverage, and only for mental health services. Meanwhile, the state Senate is in special session to consider a possible override of an ethics bill that the governor amended in the course of a veto.
An Iroquois County man faces murder charges for allegedly beating his grandfather to death. Authorities were called to a home in the rural community of Stockland near Milford Friday afternoon, where 79-year-old Herschel Fleming was pronounced dead. Investigators determined Fleming had been beaten, and they arrested 22-year-old Leonard Badenhorst, who had recently moved to Stockland from Springfield. He remains in custody. An autopsy revealed Fleming died as a result of crushing injuries to the chest. Federal authorities have approved a nearly billion-dollar highway project for northeastern Illinois. The Prairie Parkway is meant to improve infrastructure in the fast-growing counties of Kane, Kendall, and Grundy. Officials say it'll relieve congestion and help spur economic growth. The project's expected to take several years to complete. 2 years ago, a public watchdog group raised questions about then-House Speaker Dennis Hastert's links to the plan. The Sunlight Foundation suggested he may have pushed for it so he could reap profits from land deals near his Kendall County home. But Hastert strongly denied it, noting the land was miles from the proposed highway, and the Hastert attorney called the foundation's statements false, libelous, and defamatory. A farm family's donation will ensure that a rapidly developing southwest side of Champaign will have some natural space. The Champaign Park District broke ground today on a new 38-acre park just north of Windsor and Rising Roads. It'll be the district's first park featuring few playgrounds and lawns and more natural areas, including native plants. A spokeswoman says it'll be a vital natural space in that area. I'm Tom Rogers.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It's a Monday afternoon. Time to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Mark Russo joins us from his Chicago office for Chesapeake Energy. Good afternoon to you, Mark.
Hey there, Todd.
Hey, it's a beautiful, well, first, what, half, three-quarters of a day of fall?
Yeah, I believe the official time, honestly, I don't know the official
1044.
Time. I believe it was this morning.
It was 10:44, I believe.
Us meteorologists get so caught up in numbers, we forget what's what here. So, but
how about
yeah,
tomorrow's the first day?
Let's just call it that. And this overall trend of very favorable weather here, and we're talking relative dryness here and warmth, at least over the past week or so, that looks to continue here for another week. Now, granted, we are going to see higher dew points here, and that's limited some drying here across sections of the Midwest, after the Ike rains and those heavy frontal rains back last weekend. And so the belt here, at least for some dry down here, you'd like to see at least some lower dew points in here and low relative humidities to help evaporate some more moisture in the air. And we don't see that here this week, but it does look like next week, as cooler temperatures move into the belt, that will allow for at least less humid conditions as well.
And then if you take a look at other parts of the globe, what do you see?
Overall, quiet conditions across most areas, and now we're beginning to turn our attention to South America and their planting season. Overall, Brazil is going to be starting off their planting of corn and soybeans in very good shape as we're seeing soil moisture improvement across both the northern and southern corn and bean areas of Brazil. Argentina, though, continues to struggle with dryness, which has been a trend here over the past 4 to 6 months over their winter's time frame. It looks like it's now beginning to possibly affect their summer crop planting here, as there's some areas of the Argentina grain belt that are in very dire shape from a soil moisture standpoint and are going to need a lot of rain here coming up over the next 4 to 6 weeks. And at this time, we just don't see that.
We don't see that, and they just don't have the moisture in the ground to get really off to a good start?
Exactly. Now, from the planting window, we have, quite a ways here. You're talking planting taking place over the next couple of months, but at least starting off this new planting window, Argentina has dryness issues.
How's China doing on its harvest season?
They're combining here in good shape here across both corn and soybean areas up in the northeastern areas of China. And now they really haven't had any kind of major delays from a rainfall standpoint. And down south, actually, where they're beginning to plant winter wheat, their soil moisture conditions are in very good shape. So all in all, China has no issues of note at this time.
All right. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. We appreciate you being along for the ride today.
All right. My pleasure, Todd.
All right. That's Mark Russo. He is with Chesapeake Energy out of Chicago, Illinois. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Stay with us on most of these radio stations. We'll be back in just about 45 seconds. So with the second half hour of the Closing Market Report, we call it our Harvest Hour edition. Today we'll talk with the Illinois Pork Producers Association's Tim Myers. That all coming up in just a few seconds right here on the Harvest Hour edition of the Closing Market Report. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is the Harvest Hour edition. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk with Tim Myers. He's with the Illinois Pork Producers Association. But time now to check in on Wall Street. And Bill Burnside, Burnside and Company, out of Danville, joins us to give us an update. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Todd, and thanks for putting me on here. It looks like the uncertainty about what's going to happen has taken its toll on the Dow today. We're down 324 points at 11,064 on the Dow. On the NASDAQ, we're down almost 79 points at 2194. And on the S&P 500, we're down almost 42 at 1213. The volume on the New York is poised to be the lowest level in at least 2 weeks, with about 980 million shares exchanging hands at this time. The breadth is very negative, of course. The advances outpace decliners about 4-1. And the major indexes are extending their losses. The S&P 500 down more than 3% with weakness in financials, consumer discretionary, and telecom issues. The 10-year Treasury bond at 3.82. General Motors says it's issued a defaulted rating downgrade to CCC from B- with a negative outlook at Fitch. The downgrade was prompted by the diminished liquidity and lack of access to capital. Well, that's pretty much some of the highlights of today, if you want to call them highlights or negatives. The unchanged issues on the New York Stock Exchange is 55. Declines right now are 26.91, and the advances are 753, with a little over 4,570,000,000 shares traded on the New York Stock Exchange. This has been Bill Burnside of the William C. Burnside Company at 111 North Vermillion in Danville, Illinois. Returning you now to WILL.
Thanks much, Bill. Bill Burnside joins us here on a Monday afternoon during this Harvest Hour edition of the Closing Market Report. During this part of the program, we'll talk with Tim Myers. He's with the Illinois Pork Producers Association. Joins us from his Springfield office. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Dad. How are you doing?
I'm very well. First, better tell us what the Illinois Pork Producers Association is, does, and who it serves.
You bet. The Illinois Pork Producers has been informed in 1947, so we've had 61 years of service to pork producers in Illinois. We basically help pork producers with anything that we can do to help them be profitable with producer education, working on regulation and legislative activities, and then as well as promoting pork to consumers. So we utilize both pork checkoff funds and non-checkoff funds that we raise at the pork patio and our pork expo in February in Peoria and various events like that. So we have a group of board of directors that direct our activities that we do. We have a office staff of 7 people here in Springfield that basically we work on these projects and activities on behalf of producers in Illinois. And like I said, it seems like we've always got plenty going on, but that's our mission is to help serve the pork industry in Illinois, which is a very important part of our economy. You look at about $1.7 billion that the pork industry generates in Illinois and about a little over 7,800 jobs in the state, and we are the 4th largest state in pork production in the country. So pork production is very significant in Illinois, and our job is to help support that and promote that as much as we can.
Well, you know, tell me about how this industry has changed over the last couple of decades and what the consolidation has meant. Are there as many hogs and farmers or both in the state of Illinois? How's the change come about in the last couple of decades?
Sure, yep. The pork industry has gone through changes like a lot of segments of society and business, and we have had seen larger farms, as we are seeing on the grain side as well, too. And so because of that, we are seeing fewer numbers of hog farms right now. USDA says we're around 2,900 hog farms in the state. The number of pigs, though, has remained fairly constant in Illinois. So we're seeing, you know, less producers with more pigs. A part of that is just economies of scale and trying to keep up with global market place that we are in. And so that has impacted the industry, but I think, you know, if we look at the commitment of producers of producing a quality product, that has remained constant over that time, and caring for the environment, caring for their animals, you know, that those things have remained a constant while the industry has gone through these changes. And like I said, like a lot of other aspects of agriculture and other businesses as well.
Let's address one issue head on in Iowa. We've had some problems, at least the pork producers have had.
The People for Ethical Treatment for Animals, or PETA, has put together some film, apparently true film, from an Iowa farm with mistreatment of hogs. How do you deal with such things?
Well, I mean, first of all, that video showing those the mistreatment of animals is despicable, and everyone in the pork industry, you know, looks at that and definitely just takes their job of caring for animals very seriously, and the things that are shown in that video is not something that farms is typical on farms across the country. So, you know, those things when they're brought forward need to be dealt with, and I know the farm has said that they are working on a thorough investigation and definitely going through their policies, procedures, looking at employees that you know that were involved in those incidents and doing everything they can to address that situation. So, you know, that those things are unfortunate. Like I said, it's majority of farms are definitely care for their animals, and as an industry, we definitely take our responsibility very seriously. And definitely condemns the abuse of animals, especially those that were shown on that videotape.
Does IPPA provide its farmers and producers husbandry tips, tricks, sorts of things, and how good care and proper care should be done?
Yeah, we basically work with the national group, the National Pork Board. They've got a lot of resources and materials, and actually the pork industry has been very proactive in this area, too. We've got a pork quality assurance program that's been in place since the mid-'80s, and we just went through kind of a revision of that here a few years ago, which is now Pork Quality Assurance Plus, which does incorporate animal welfare practices into that. We know very much that how we care for our animals on the farm turns into the quality of product that we can provide to consumers. So, like I said, we've been very proactive in this as an industry, and we've got a program and materials in place that do help producers look at ways that they the production practices and what kind of impact that has ultimately on meat quality and the welfare of the animals. That's definitely something that has been a very hot topic in the industry the last few years and will continue to be in the future.
Now, on that subject, we'll stay with the welfare of animals for just a second. Do we talk about number of square foot available per animal? What other types of things might be in the handbook for pork producers?
Yeah, that's one thing as far as square feet per animal, how animals are handled and transport. There's a whole program as well, transport quality assurance, that goes through and helps truckers and those that are transporting hogs, how they can the best way to load hogs. There's procedures for loading animals, and that plays into it. You know, basically, it really comes down to it: the stockmanship and the care that the producers give on a daily basis, and making sure there's water and feed and good ventilation and good health practices. All those things that that we've been doing over the years. It just kind of provides it in a checklist format that they can kind of assess the welfare of their animals for their farm and look at ways that they can continue to improve it and get some better benchmark on that as far as what they've done over the years.
How have producers in the state been dealing with the higher feed costs?
You know, it's been a challenge like everywhere else. It's the higher cost of corn and beans obviously has had a big impact. When you look at the cost for raising pigs, the largest cost is the price of feed. Corn and soybeans make up a large part of the diets, and that's the largest cost for producing pigs. So that we've seen some adjustments as far as looking at alternative feed ingredients, looking at dried distillers grains or DDGs. We're very lucky here in Illinois to have Hans Stein at the University of Illinois, who is one of the nation's top nutrition experts in utilizing DDGs for swine. We've had a lot of research that we put in, both at the state and national level, looking at ways how do we better utilize the DDGs product. Right now, cattle can consume that more readily than pigs because of the way their digestive tract is set up. So we've put a lot of effort into looking at research ways that we can increase the level of DDGs and try to lower that feed cost. But, you know, it's been a challenge. And as we look to the future, it looks like that's something that we're going to have to continue to deal with. as an industry, and that producers are going to have to continue to fine-tune their feeding strategies and look for ways to cut the cost as much as possible.
How did the joint venture that you did with the University of Illinois and some of the specialists here on campus over the summertime dealing with the high feed costs go and the websites you developed?
Yeah, very well. We had a kind of a change of our programming. We try to use technology a little bit more this time. We had a web series of seminars that were online. We worked with University of Illinois and had about five or six different experts talk about things such as nutrition and engineering aspects, ways to lower energy usage of buildings, looking at reproduction issues, all those things that we made available online. And we had had over 2,000 hits to the site, so we were very pleased with that. And we thought that was a good indication that producers were, you know, utilizing the information. And so we look at, you know, trying to continue to build upon those type of efforts to try to provide producers with good educational tools that they can utilize on their farm to help them get through this time and look at remaining viable here in the future.
We'll come back to some other issues after we take a break in a couple of minutes, but maybe you could, if you do know some of the background of pork producers and some of the things that they've done over time and how checkoff dollars work and maybe the pork, the other white meat campaign, you could talk about some of those things just a bit for me.
Okay. Yeah, the other white meat campaign has been a very successful campaign started in the mid-'80s and basically repositioned the pork industry, you know, as a way to, as really in consumers' mind about the perception of pork and looking at the healthy quality and the leanness of the product. You know, it's been recognized as one of the top 10 most recognizable slogans in the country, and so that continues to be our main focus on marketing efforts is building upon that that brand, kind of that slogan mindset with consumers and building upon that and talking to consumers about how they can utilize pork in their meals with their families at home, working to continue to add pork to restaurant menus and food service menus, as well as looking to promote pork in retail outlets as well too. So that the checkoff is basically focuses on demand enhancement on the pork another white meat campaign, on our education research programs, as we mentioned, on feed research, on disease prevention, all those things that we're doing as an industry to try to help producers deal with these issues. And so that checkoff that producers pay is 40 cents per $100 value. That goes to the National Pork Board and then gets reallocated back to the states. In Illinois, we receive about 19% of those funds back in Illinois to use on education, research, and promotion activities here in the state as well. So, you know, those are the main things that we focus on with checkoff, and like I said, over the years we've had very good success of building that other white meat campaign and looking at ways that we can continue to grow our markets, and definitely we need to talk about exports as well too, because exports have been a phenomenal bright spot for the pork industry. Looking at our 16th year of consecutive increases in pork exports, and this year it's definitely been a record year for us and really has helped keep prices up to where they could have been a lot worse if we wouldn't have had the amount of exports that we've had in this country. We're now about 20 to 25% of our production is being exported, we went from a net importer to now a net exporter and exporting about 20 to 25% of our production. So
we can take more of that up when we come back, okay?
Okay.
All right. Tim Myers is with the Illinois Pork Producers Association, joining us here on our Harvest Hour edition of the Closing Market Report. We'll talk with him again in just 2 minutes. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.